All right, welcome back to the Beautiful Shifts podcast. Today, we're actually doing a re-release of Jorge Font. We released his episode back April 11th, 2023, and he was amazing.
Yeah, he really was. So about a year ago, I guess.
Almost exactly
a year, I guess. And we were like discussing who should we, so we decided to do a re-release this week because it's spring break and we both will be out of town and it's kind of a crazy time. Mm-hmm. And this one just always stands out to us as a really powerful, inspirational, really, he's just an amazing guy.
Yeah. And I had the privilege. So my husband had heard him speak at a work thing. And so I reached out and asked if he'd be on the podcast. And he said he would love to. And we so happened to be going to Florida and he's from Florida. And so we actually went to lunch with him and his wife and they were just such amazing people.
Yeah.
Like actually he would love to have his wife on sometime too. She was awesome, but he was so kind and wise and just had such a good outlook on life and so many lessons to share in the podcast. So, okay. So a little bit about Jorge. Jorge grew up in Mexico City and as a teen became a competitive water skier, breaking several national and Latin American records for trick skiing. At 19 years old, he was in a water skiing accident and became paraplegic. Following the accident, he continued his love for water skiing and has become a 9-time world champion in tricks and 6-time world champion in slalom, competing as a disabled water skier. In this conversation, Jorge shares these experiences about the challenges, mental and physical, of his new normal, how he views his new way of living as an adventure, and his deep love and gratitude for his family, life, and humanity. Jorge shares about meeting his future wife during college and becoming a father and what that means to him. We get to discuss the importance of inclusion and accommodations for those with disabilities and how this provides value for everyone in society. Jorge is a wonderful human all around with so many meaningful life perspectives and left us feeling inspired and uplifted. Thank you so much to Jorge for taking the time with us. We are so grateful for your example and for sharing your story with us. So yes, again, thank you to Jorge.
Yeah.
He's been really great and supportive of the podcast. Him and his wife were really cute before I met him. They're like, oh yeah, we've been binging your podcast so we can know more about it and, you know, love the episodes and stuff.
Yeah, so, they were so
anyway,
cute.
It's, if you haven't listened to it, we just wanted to give other people a chance to go back and just see how amazing he is.
Yeah.
And so I think the whole time we were in awe of him.
Yeah. And it was one of those, like, after we talked to him, I felt so uplifted and kind of just like peaceful. Like, he just has like such a great presence and perspective on life.
Yeah. And I think kind of made you think, okay, I can do hard things. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really inspiring that way.
For sure. Yeah. He's awesome. So we're excited for you guys to hear it. And yeah. Well, it's spring break, not for everyone, but for us. For us, so hope you're having a fun vacation wherever you are, if you're out of town, or Easter's coming up this week as well. So yeah, a lot of fun things going on.
And you had a lot of going on.
Oh yeah. That's what I was like. I know
his life has been exciting right now.
Well, yeah. So we had puppies this week. Well, my dog had puppies and I know, anyway, it's just been really fun. They're so cute and little. And we were talking to, so my brother's in town from out of town and I'm like, it is kind of fun because it's spring and it's like
new birth.
It's like, And so it's just been fun to have like little animals in the house. I mean, it's been crazy. I feel like I've hardly got any sleep. Puppies, yeah. There was six, that's five awesome. Boys and one girl.
That's really crazy.
I know.
That's odd seem like that wouldn't be the case.
That's trying to think, it was the three boys came out and then finally we got the girl. And then she didn't have any more for like an hour. And we thought, okay, she must be done. But then more came and I'm like, oh good, we're going to get some more girls.
And then no girls.
But they were both boys, actually, but that's okay.
Our dog had puppies a couple years ago and I'm trying to remember, but I feel like we had the opposite. I think we had like 8 girls and 4 boys.
Oh, so there was 12. That's a lot of puppies. It was crazy. But that was a bigger dog. Yeah. She's smaller. She's just a little Cavapoo. And it was funny too. Cause we don't have to include this or not, but my daughter, like Hallie, had written out a bunch of names based on Taylor Swift songs, titles of names, but most of them just worked for girls. Name. So we kind of scratched that idea and now we're each just going to name one. We still actually haven't yet. There's
everybody gets
So we still have a couple Taylor Swift song ideas that can work for boys, but there wasn't enough. We're like, what do we do?
It.
Like,
that was a cute idea.
Yeah. But anyway, it was fun. And they're just darling. So if you know anyone on the lookout for a Cavapoo puppy.
That's a good idea. Let's advertise.
I just thought of that. Yeah. I haven't. Who was it? When we were at book group, someone's like, so have you like advertised? Do you have people? I'm like no, I haven't done any of that.
Yeah. So if you want a Cavapoo, I have a Cavapoo, Sean. Is yours a Cavapoo, Sean?
She's just a Cavapoo.
And these are the cutest, sweetest puppies.
They're just so, and our dog, Rosie, I just love her so much.
I know. That's how mine is. Mine is named Ziggy. And he's like, I told Nate the other day, I'm like, I really, really love, not a dog person, but I love Ziggy.
That is how I feel.
He's so cuddly. He's so cute. He likes to play. He's playful. And he's...
Yeah. They just have the sweetest temperament. Yeah.
And they're the perfect size. Yeah. They're about, what, 11-ish pounds?
Yeah. She's... Rosie's, yeah, like 11 or so. And she's been the cutest mom, too.
Oh, like, so sweet.
Yeah. So, so sweet. Cute. It just climbs up in there with them and they're like clobbering her. And
it's so cute.
But she doesn't care. She's just so patient and... Awesome. You know, yeah, it's been fun.
That's cool. It's cool for your kids to see like kind of that whole like
process
of like, I don't know, animals. And
And they watched the birth too. And,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was exciting. Awesome. So fun stuff. Anyway, that's a little
reach out if you want a puppy, cute puppy.
It wasn't meant to be a commercial by any means, but,
but they are the cutest dogs. Really I ever got another dog, it would be another one. Like
I know. I love them. They're the sweetest.
Okay. Well, enjoy Jorge. He is just amazing. So if you haven't listened, please do and enjoy your spring break.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're on the way, at least in Utah, for better weather.
Yes.
It's a crazy couple days.
Yeah. We need the sunshine. Yeah.
Lightning and thunder last night.
Oh, I know. That that was kind of scary. It came out so loud and so far. Kind of fast.
Like, oh, but it made me think, okay, it is spring because you don't really have thunderstorms and winter.
That's true. And I actually kind of like the rain last night.
I do too. I was like, okay, spring's coming. I love rain. So anyway, all right.
All right. Thanks.
Lost the weight upon my shoulder. Now it's easier to walk. I can see the road before me. I am not afraid to fall.
Okay, welcome to the podcast today. We have a really special episode. We're with Jorge Font. Hi, Jorge.
Hi, how are you? I'm very pleased to be with you.
Yes, thank you for being here. So we heard about Jorge from a friend of my husband that he works with, Fernando, which also I consider a friend. Fernando is an awesome person, and he had you speak at a Little Caesars event, right, in Mexico City?
Yes, he invited me to share my experience with the people that is working there, and... He's a great guy. He creates a great atmosphere, and he's, I think that he's like a person that can like be a great professional and a great person, and that is the people that I look up to be.
Yes, I found that to be true about Fernando. And so he kind of, connected Jorge and I, and then crazy enough, Jorge is joining us from Orlando, and three weeks ago, time flies. I went to Orlando with my husband to a conference, and we were able to meet with Jorge and his wife, Teresa. Is that how you say it?
Yes, Teresa. Yes, perfect.
Teresa. Yeah, and she was so lovely, and it was so great to meet both of you, and so we were able to have lunch with you guys and get to know you and hear about your story. And I thought that was just perfect timing that I invited you on the podcast. And then I happened to be in Orlando. So we were able to meet in person. So that was so great.
Yes. It's a great chance to meet you in person. And I hope that I can speak today, like we spoke that day. It was like a very like easy going thing. And I hope that today I get my mind to think in English, so I can speak closer to... I sometimes think in Spanish and speak in English, so if I get stuck, I will just ask for your help.
Oh, of course. That's fine. Totally fine. And I'm very impressed with both you and your wife's English, because you guys have only been in Orlando for not a very long.
Yeah, we have been here for 2 years. We're very happy, having our time here.
Okay. That's great. And remind me, what was the city? I know that you called the city you were from the Eternal Spring, which sounded so lovely, but I can't remember the name of the city.
The name is a hard one, I think, in English. It's Cuernavaca.
Oh, yes, that's very hard.
Cuernavaca, but they call it the city of the Eternal Spring. And it's like a 1 hour drive from Mexico City on the way to Acapulco.
Okay, yeah. Hmm. It sounds very nice. And you still have family there, right?
Yes. Yes, we have dear friends and family there.
Oh, awesome. Oh,
nice. And what brought you to Orlando?
We came to here because Pablo was starting to study, and he He's finishing high school, my son Pablo. So we thought that moving here would be a great opportunity for him, especially for the future. Like looking for opportunities for Pablo. He's a water skier also. And here is a great chance to do and practice that.
Yeah, there's lots of lakes in Florida to water ski on. So
yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's great. Read your bio and then get into your story.
Yeah, okay. Jorge received his bachelor's degree in business administration from the Technological and Superior Studies Institute of Monterey and his master's degree at the Ibero-American University. Sorry. Since he was 7 years old, he's practiced water skiing and by 1987 had broken the national and Latin American record for trick skiing in four occasions in 1983, 1984, 1986, and 1987. That's so cool. On March 8th, 1988, he had a sports accident that caused him to become quadriplegic, which is paralysis of his torso, lower body, and legs. As a disabled water skier, he has been a 9-time world champion in tricks, breaking the world record 4 times. He's won the world champion in slalom 6 times. Jorge works as the director of institutional philosophy at the Telethon Foundation and director of Meaning and Human Development in Nice. He participates as an associate member on the board of trustees at Tech de Monterey campus in
Cuernavaca.
There we go. Yes. Jorge has worked as a consultant for human processes and a speaker in conferences on human development for more than 30 years in Mexico, the United States, Spain, Portugal, Panama, Chile, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Paraguay, and El Salvador. So,
yes. And then I see here you've written a book, and I'm assuming the book's written in Spanish.
Yes. That's what I you know, this morning before getting in touch again with you, I was just thinking that I have to make a translation of my book.
Yeah, because I would love to read it. And I think it's, so can you tell us the name of the book?
In Spanish, in Spanish, it's Ensanchar la Vida. And in English, it would be like to make your life broader, to expand your life.
You know, what's really interesting about that is when I did a translation before the interview, because I was curious what it meant. And what's crazy is when we were deciding on the name of our podcast, it was between Beautiful Shifts and Expanded Life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a translation, close translation to that, because we are trying to think like when people go through things in life, you know, like the idea of seeing beauty in it, and then also the idea of like expanding your view or expanding your thoughts, or, you know, being broad and widened to things is what happens when you go through experiences. So I thought that was kind of cool that it was one of our names we were deciding between. So I love the name of your book.
Yes, I think that probably a lot of the persons that you get to interview, they have like, at least it is with me, that probably one can see your life like divided in two spaces, like before an accident and after it, or before an incident and after it. And I think that the way that you're presenting it is like to see our life, or at least my life, as multiplied by two. So it's like having like both the experience of being like an able-bodied person and then entering the disabled world because of an accident. So it's like I see that I have had the chance in my life to have the both perspectives. And I think that it's, at least for me, it has helped a lot in trying to be more empathetic and to see from different perspectives and different points of view whatever happens.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. And I loved when we asked you, you know, we sent you an email and you said kind of what experience, and I loved how you said it, because you said, "I will share my experience of entering the world of disability through a sports accident and the lessons I have received from my family and friends in this adventure." And I was like, oh, it's an adventure. Like, you know, and I'm sure it's been hard and there's been hard things, but your mindset right now is that it's an adventure. It's new. I mean, you went from being a professional water skier and then you still did that afterwards in a different way, but you still competed. And so it was an adventure.
Yeah, I thought that was
a really positive way of looking at things. And I love that you said, well, I look forward to this experience with a big smile in my heart regarding our interview today. So I love that as well, because we were really looking forward to talking to you.
Yes, I think that what you do, I like it very much, because it's like a way of truly believing that people that listen to your podcast, they can like have these like wider lives, like broadening their perspective, and also like trusting that people are intelligent and that they can learn through others' experience. Because like there's like this phrase that you don't know what you've got till you lose it. And I think that you don't believe that. It's like you trust more in people putting themselves in the other's person's skin, and through that you can learn through other experience. And I think that's the miracle of really sharing and communicating from the heart, and that's a very intelligent, I would say, like wise way of going through life, like trusting that people can really listen, put themselves in your place, and from there, like have a wiser perspective of life.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that.
All right. Well, maybe do you want to tell us just a little bit about your childhood and how you got into water skiing in the first place?
Well, I grew up in Mexico. I was born in Mexico City, and my dad was a water skier. He is in the Mexican Confederation Hall of Fame because he had the world record in trick skiing. So Sergio, my brother, and I, Sergio is 2 years younger than me, we started skiing at the same age. I was 7, Sergio was 5. So we grew up in Mexico City, and we every Wednesday and every weekend, we went to ski to a lake. That's a hard name also. I think it's harder than Cuernavaca. It is called Pequesquitengo. So that's the name of the lake that used to ski. So my life as a young kid, it was like I started in Mexico City and I started skiing, and then I started training like more formally. And so my life was starting in Mexico, and on Wednesday we went all the afternoon to ski and then came back to sleep to Mexico City. And then I finished my high school in Mexico City, and I was starting my, that was a difficult time for me, in the sense that I didn't know what to study. So after a lot of thinking and reflection, I decided that I wanted to go into the medical school. I wanted to be a doctor. So I started my it's an introductory course on which there isn't like not one single exam. You have like this 6-month course to see if you like medicine and if the med school likes you. And I was there, and I had my accident when I had I remember that day I had an exam of a very hard class, and histología they call it. So I was skiing and then going to this course in the afternoon, and one day while I was training, I was like fooling around. I got too close to the shore, just like jumping, and my ski got caught in the shore, and I hit the shore and I broke my neck I broke the sixth and seventh vertebra of my neck, and from then on, I have a quadriplegic. That means that I cannot feel or move from my chest down. I can move my arms. When I fell, I couldn't extend my arms. The triceps, the muscle that is behind the back part of my arm, didn't work well. But I recovered that because of a great surgery. And I have a hard time moving my fingers. I can extend my left hand, which is very useful to say hello and hi, but it's not much. And the right hand, I really can't extend it or move it very much. So that's how I got injured and how I got life-changing event. Because
you were 19, is that?
I fell when I was 19, and I was just starting to study in the university. And I think that, in this quick explanation, I just spoke about probably the things that change physically, but there are a lot of things that are not self-evident, and that those are I think the hard issues to solve, how do you feel, what is going to happen in my life, what were my plans and my projects, and how they also sort of at least freeze if not get lost. So that's how I felt or how I was when I had my accident.
Yeah, because it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing.
And I'm sure your whole life ahead of you, because you're only 19, so that's a big mental shift for you to all of a sudden change your perspective that way.
Yes, let's say it's when you're, at least me, when you're deciding what do you want to do with your life, what do you want to study, what do you want to do in your professional development, and also, Lindsay, who do you want to be with? And it's funny that at that age you are invited to take such big decisions. But
that's true.
And sometimes when you see it in hindsight, it's not that way. But when you're that age, you feel it that way. So I was in the middle of these decisions. Going into life and being every time more independent. And in my case, I would say also being a water skier, you feel like this sense of control and enjoy of control of your body. You know, you can do with your body a lot of things. You can flip and you can make toe turns and you can do a lot of things. And from one moment to another, you lose control of even the most basic things that your body does, going to
It's because you're doing something with your body every day that none of us, first of all, if you've never seen trick skiing, you need to look it up, because you showed us a video of Pablo and I was amazed. I was a water skier growing up, slalom. I didn't do a lot of tricks, but watching what they do, you have to be very control of your body, and you have to be, I'm sure it took a lot of practice. And it's cool that your dad did it, and then you and your brother did it, and now your son does it. But the extreme, like you're saying, the extreme control of your body, and that's what you did, and then to lose that, that's really hard.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges of like the physical part of him, like feeling that you have some control of a lot of things and then losing it all, and then like teaching your body how to do things when you want them to happen. Because sometimes I feel like my body has its own time and agenda, and so I try to say, hey, give me a hand. Let's make a deal and at least try to put our schedules together and make it work.
Work together.
Yeah. And then there are also other things. I would say that one of the most challenging issues is not physical. I mean, it starts up with these physical issues, but it's like, I would say, like, I would try to explain it like this. It's like feeling that all of your friends, all of the people around you keep on with their life, and their life is in color and moving, and yours is like a black and white picture that is just seeing life passing by, and you're not living life. I think that that's one of the most difficult, like, I would say, sensations or feelings or perspectives. That the hard part of that is that it's not self-evident. Only if someone get close to you and really gets to listen with attention and with their hearts and try to be really empathetic, that's the only way to understand it. Otherwise, if you see like in a picture, you don't see what I'm talking about. You see like not moving, like not being able to do some things, like having issues with transferring from the bed to the wheelchair or from the wheelchair to the car. That's what you see. But what you don't see, and that part of feeling that you're losing the experience of life and losing the connection with others, I think that's the challenging part.
Yeah. That'd be really hard. It's so impressive because, I mean, this accident was how many, when we met, it was the anniversary. Yeah. It just happened to be the anniversary, mm-hmm. right? When we met for lunch. But remind me, how many years? Was it 30?
I had my accident on the 8th of March. That's when we met.
Yeah.
And it was in 1988. So I really have more time, like I would say, rolling around than walking.
Yeah, rolling around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your experience on Earth, like right now, is more in your wheelchair than out.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also feels like it seems so like your memory and of the emotions and all the things that you went through and still probably do go through, you know, is so vivid and everything. So I'm sure even though it feels long ago, also it doesn't probably feel that long ago, just like everything in life. It goes by so fast. And
I feel like obviously you're here today, and I mean, it's hard to express the experience I had meeting you and talking with you. And like you said, it just flowed really easy. It was a really good conversation with our spouses. And you are just like, if I wish you guys could see him, cause we just, we'll have a clip probably, but,
yeah.
You just smile, you like exude like confidence and happiness and peace.
Yeah. But, I'd say peacefulness for sure.
But obviously you had to get there somehow. So maybe you could tell us like, after your accident and realizing that you wouldn't, you know, that you'd be in a wheelchair and not walk, like how did you get yourself through that mentally? What was your mindset, or did you have therapy, or did you have friends and family? Like how did you get to the mental strength that you have today?
Yeah. And I also wanted to ask just physically, like what was going on after your accident? I mean, like, did you have surgeries quickly following? Like, I mean, I'm sure you probably didn't have a lot of, you couldn't move around. Like, how was that just following the actual accident? And then like Chantel said, you know, the progression of where you're at to where you're at today.
Well, First, I had a when I had my accident, I was very fortunate to have a surgery that was like before like 8 hours of my injury, and it was a great neurosurgeon in Mexico City. So I was in the hospital for 8 days, and then I was dismissed. I don't know how to say it in English correctly.
Oh, released.
Yeah
released, dismissed.
Released mm-hmm. from the hospital, which in I would say that if you think about it, when you go to the hospital and you are released, it's like, hey, game over. That's it. I'm back to my life. I would say that one of the most difficult moments in my life was getting out of the hospital, because a hospital can be a nightmare. And most of the times it is. I mean, unless yeah. you go there to have a baby, no? But most of the times it's a nightmare. But nightmares are dreams, you know? The difficult part is waking up to reality. And that is getting out of the hospital and coming back to your house and to your room, which is a room of a different person. That's not anymore your room. You can't even reach the shirts that are in the closet. You can't even go out of your bedroom, of your bed and transfer to the chair. That's like the first, I would say, difficult part. And then it's like even in the hospital, it's like this like very difficult moments when you are like just laying there probably with a tube in your mouth, with a neck and you suddenly turn your face and see the eyes and of your parents or your brother or your cousin or your best friends, and with this like looking at you like saying, I love you and I don't like what you're going through. And it's like feeling that a little bit of guilt, you know, it's like they're feeling like that because of me. That's not easy. That's not even like all, as I said, self-evident. But I also think, Chantel, that there's a paradox there. And that is where the beautiful shift starts. Because I think that there is nothing more powerful in life than the look in the eyes of the people that love you. And I found in their eyes, the people that love you, they say like that a friend is someone that accepts you like as you are. And I think that's half of the truth. Because I discovered in the eyes of my friends and my family a Jorge that I would never would have found by myself. So, Lindsay, when you say that I have a very like powerful or strong mind, I would say that probably that's what I project, but that's not true. My greatest strength is my vulnerability and my fragility. And I have found that the look in the eyes of the people that love you, that is where real strength comes from. And in that sense, I am very lucky. I am very lucky because when I fell, I felt like this invisible, yet very tangible and real net that catch me, that embrace me, and then push me back to life. And that net is really the network of family and friends and the people that did what I find most amazing, and I am more grateful in life, that someone gets out of their way just to be with you. Not, they don't have to say anything. They don't have to give you any recommendations. They don't even have to give you any gifts. They are giving you the gift of their presence, of their love, and of their intent of understanding what you're going through. And I think that is the most powerful source of energy in life. And that's love. In one word.
I love that so much. That was so well put. Yeah. Got me a little emotional.
Oh, me too. I was like, holy cow, this is like the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's, I mean, when I do think about going through hard things, it really is just the presence of the people you love around you. And they don't, you know, even with, we interviewed this Mason that lost his family in a car wreck. And that is what he said. He said, it wasn't really what people said. It was just the fact they were there.
Yeah.
That they're the connection and the presence and just their love of just, like you said, just being there and the empathy and the support and love is just so important and what we need.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think you give yourself enough credit, because I think you're very smart and eloquent and wise and everything. But I think it's amazing that you feel that your family saw that in you, and sounds like they didn't want to have you give up on you. And so it seems like what you were saying there is you were looking to them, like the way that they looked at you, you started to believe, and then you wanted to become that. And I think that's really cool. So
I think that's an issue of, I would say, of pain and not solicited debt. And I am the greatest, how you say, a person that has like a big debt, people have invested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt is I have to pay back. I cannot be the same person after what I have received from the people around me. Otherwise, I would be very selfish and very stupid, because I have received from my friends and from my family gifts that I would never have expected. And I even feel that I wouldn't even deserve it. They say, this saying that the person that needs more love most of the time are people that don't deserve it. And I think that I felt that. It's like I receive more comprehension, more help, more just being with me that I would ever think I would deserve. So that's a big problem in life, because it's like, what I'm going to do to live up to all these investors in my broken enterprise of life? So that's a moving thing. It's like, what am I going to do? So what I've tried in my life is to try to do things like to pay back. That's why I appreciate so much this opportunity and this invitation to be with you, because it's a little chance to try to pay back, which, by the way, is a terrible business, because I will finish this podcast and my debt will only get bigger with you. So that's why I studied business administration, and I don't know why I studied that, because every time I have these opportunities, I get a bigger debt in my life.
Well, you're giving us something. Yeah, so I don't look at it that way at all. But
yeah, we're just giving you a platform to tell your story to so many people that I know that will help. But like Lindsay and I have said, if we're the only ones that even listen to this, or we get to have this conversation with you, we feel honored that you're sharing your story and that you're just the things that you have learned, and then your perspective of, and I'm so grateful that you had those people in your life so that you had that drive to find your new second life, like you're saying, like a new chapter, and part of that chapter is helping others and giving back, and that's, if we could all live that way, then
yeah,
be a pretty good place to be in this earth, just
yeah,
giving back always and paying it forward.
Yes, I think that that's like a big part of, I would say, Lindsay, as you said, the adventure of my life. It's like trying to really like meet people in different circumstances and try to learn from them. I remember, for instance, the first time I had the chance to go to a jail in Mexico City, and it was like a mind-blowing experience to see what happens there, and try to see what I think is one of the biggest gifts that I've received in my life, in my experience, is how to look at persons without being overwhelmed by the adjectives that life puts you. And I think that in jail is very hard, because what you're trying to visit and see and help is people. I didn't care if they were kidnappers. That's not the issue. And that's the thing that I felt with me. Like people, when they are close to me, especially in the hard moments of my life, what they were telling me is, what is important is Jorge, not any kind of adjective or disability or whatever. And I think that I have always said that one of the most powerful ways to do that is, I would say, like in this translation, but it's taco therapy. And that the taco therapy is like when your friends invite you to get out of your bed, out of your bedroom, and they just invite you to eat some tacos with them.
Oh, good. I was thinking that's what you were going to say. But yeah, I was like, am I thinking of this right?
Yeah. You know, one thing we always, I feel like some of our friends, like, we'll go get like a smoothie. Like, that's our smoothie therapy. It's just like your taco therapy. But tacos sound really good.
Food, talking. Yeah. Like, that's
just
therapy.
Connecting and getting you out to talk to your friends and the people that you care about and that care about you. So I love that. Taco therapy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you go to taco therapy, one of the things that happens is that when you're eating tacos, you have to shut your mouth. I mean, at least so they don't have yet the beans here in the middle. Yeah. You close your mouth. And when you close your mouth, a miracle starts growing. And that is the miracle of loving and kindness silence. And this is the silence that is not just like this silence from indifference. It's like this silence that is telling you more than any word would be able to say. So when you're silently listening from your heart to another person, what you're telling him is you are the most important thing in life right now. And that changes your life. It's like, there's a Mexican poet, his name is Jaime Sabines, that says that the most beautiful words are those that are said between two people that don't say a word. You do that by going to eat tacos with your friends. That's the miracle of ordinary life. And that's the miracle of just feeling yourself understood and listened and felt by the persons that are more important for you.
That's awesome. That's some good words of wisdom there. Go have taco therapy with your loved ones.
I know. I'm like, tacos. We should switch to tacos and smoothies. I was wondering, maybe you were going to ask this, but so at what point, so you went through kind of your healing process, but I was wondering how you met your wife and kind of, how that all came about.
Well, I met Tere in the university, and I remember I had the first like team project that I had to make. It was with her, but at that point it was like just like a friend from school. And then I would say that one of the like heart issues of these things that are not self-evident is like going out on the street after being like in the rehab, and then like feeling that everybody's life and life as looking for a couple, it's going nice, and it's like this like feeling not very explicit and probably not even talked about, at least that's what I remember, of who would be willing to look at me or to be with me like this. And then I found this like beautiful look that taught me that there are people that are able to see a piece of art that it's developing and not just stare at the frame of wheels and look at the picture. And that look is Tere, my wife, and I really get to know her more in the you will laugh about it, in the very romantic class of statistics. And against all odds and probabilities, she fell in love with me, and I
thought, she fell in
love. Yeah.
And I also learn from her. I learn every day from her, but I learned that there are people that are not just willing to see like a painting and not get lost in the frame, but that say, I want to make that painting with you. And at first I thought that you would only get into the disability world by accident or by chance. But with Tere, I have learned that there are people like her that are willing to get into the disabled world through decisions and through love. And
that's so beautiful.
I am truly very lucky to say and to be able to present myself as Tere's husband, which is having a lot of luck, and Chantel met her, and she would, I think.
I will attest to her beautiful person inside and out. Very just intelligent, thoughtful. Yes. I mean, just a beautiful person all around.
Yeah. Chantel, because, you know, we had chatted a little bit about you guys meeting, knowing that we had this interview coming up, and she's like, he is amazing. His wife is amazing. That you're just going to love them. You're going to love him. And so, yeah, I've heard wonderful things about both of you. I have my curiosity. I'm like, I want to hear a little bit more about, you know.
Yeah, well, I think
that came up. Yeah.
I don't know if I realized until we met that she met you after your accident. Mm-hmm. And so, like you were saying, I'm sure you in your mind were like, hey, who's going to want to be with me? And who, you know, is seeing this frame of me and not looking at the painting inside? And that Teresa was that type of person that would look past that and look at the painting. And then I love the vision of you saying, and then you made a painting together.
Like, yeah.
You know, came together with this beautiful, you know, union and marriage and family. And that's just so wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm so also, I think I am very lucky because of, I mean, just with Tere, it's being very lucky, but with her family. Because, you know, the princess in the story, they appear horseback riding. They don't appear in a wheelchair. So that speaks greatly of my in-laws and the way that they have, like, they show first a lot of respect to Tere's decisions, and also the way that they make me feel loved as another son. So I think that that's also like a very, very important part of my life history, like this, like look and this, like gratefulness for life and for whatever comes, especially thinking in my father-in-law and my mother-in-law, they want the best for Tere, and like this, like acceptance and the way that they have, like, always seen us, I think that it's also like a very inspiring way of learning how to be a parent, how to really trust that your kids are taking the best decisions.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You know, you don't often think about her parents and maybe what went into that. But I love, that they were just respectful of her and supportive. And probably, again, they saw you for who you were and didn't let, you know, the fact that you were in a wheelchair or anything probably hold them back on how they were going to get to know you and view you for you, you know. So I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously, to get to know you as you are, just a wonderful, awesome person.
I know. I'm thinking, well, yeah, anyone would feel lucky for their child, and he's just an amazing guy, but I can see from your perspective, you know, you have limitations, and so you were worried about that, but yeah, it sounds like you and your wife are just a beautiful couple, so I am happy for you that you guys found each other.
Yeah, and then you guys have your son, Pablo, right? Did you tell me he's like 18 or 19?
Pablo is 19 right now, and he's like he's a great guy. I like his I would say I like his wisdom, and I like the way that he is like a 19-year-old guy. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest gift of my life is like being Pablo's dad, and also like living, I would say that I think that most or parents live with like this like challenge every day to, I hope I can live up to what being a Pablo's dad means. And I think that a lot of the things that I do every day is trying to build a world that it's up to the dignity of Pablo, and I would love to work to build a world that it's up to the dignity of all the Pablos and Paulas and kids and young people of the world. Because that's, I think that's what we have to do. The world would be different if we took our decisions, putting our kids in the center of our mindset. And I like that way of trying to live my life like that, trying to take decisions, thinking in how what I'm doing would make a better place and a better space for Pablo. Even small decisions, not just big decisions. I mean, I don't think you have to be like the president or the director of the United Nations to really make it change the world. I love the feeling and the idea of small is beautiful. And small things that you can do every day in your circumstances, in your community, in your family, that's more the sum of all those small details can really make a big difference. That's what I try to do when I think of being Pablo's dad. And also, like, I would say, like, enjoy the ride, living the adventure. And if I would say, like, two examples of what I enjoy being with Pablo, I would say, first, I love to go with him to water ski, and I love being in the boat watching him, and probably I would have to say coaching him, which is not real because he coaches me more than I, but I love, like, the experience of getting to the dock, and then it's really I don't know how to say it. I'm very grateful to feel like his strength when he carries me to get in the boat, and then he skis, and I feel like the greatest person in the world to be able to be with him in that moment. And then we have the chance to talk about how he skied and what he felt, and we sometimes laugh together, we sometimes cry together, we sometimes yell at each other, but that's life, and that's the great chance of being like Pablo's dad. And probably an example of this weekend, you know, Pablo wanted to have a free diving course, so he phoned and he got in touch with this paddy instructor. His name is Bob. And Bob is a great guy, and say, yes, okay, you can come and take your course. And say, okay, and what will we do with my dad? Because he also wants to take the course. And this guy, Bob, okay, let's do what we can do. And if the party don't give their certification, but he can stay. So this weekend, I took a free diving course with Pablo, which is like a small example of what I would say that I enjoy living the adventure and the ride of being Pablo's dad.
Yeah.
That's awesome. He also sounds like a really, a great
fun guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Great even guy. When we met, I think he had just come back from Utah coming up here to go snow skiing.
Oh, really?
With his friends and
oh, cool.
stuff though. But yeah, he sounds like a fun and kid and a good son to you, and wants you to experience all the things he does. And right. I love also your, and maybe that's why you say it's an adventure, but your mindset of like, well, first of all, you decided to keep trick skiing or competing after your accident.
Yeah.
Like how long did it take you to start doing that again? And become a world champion in that as well.
Well, I had my accident on March in 1988. And I remember that I started, like, part of my rehab was like just getting in the wheelchair and try to wheel around in the street every time more. And then I started swimming. I remember swimming in backstroke because it was easier for me. And then one day I decided, I don't know how many months about it, I want to try to ski. So I went with a just like laying and being pulled. It was like really awkward. And then we saw on a water ski magazine, there was a picture of a seat ski and a guy seat skiing. And I would say that it was my brother and me. We didn't just look at the picture. We studied it.
like, what is he doing? We have to get one of those.
And then my brother went to the World Water Ski Championships in, it must have been August or July of 89. So 3 weeks before, 3 days before the tournament, I went with my mom to a place to learn how to seat ski and to buy a seat ski. That was the first time I skied again. And by the way, I would say that one very important part in my life is that I had my accident. I remember it was a Wednesday. And I had my surgery probably that day. That Saturday, Sergio, my brother, was skiing. And that was a great thing for me, because what he showed me is that some things change, some things get complicated, but some things keep on going. I would have felt very guilty if I would not just break my neck, but would have finished with the water skiing career of my brother, who turned out to be one of the best skiers of the world. So when he went to the World Water Ski Championships, I went to this school in Winter Haven, and I bought some seat skis, and I learned how to ski again. And it was a fun experience, you know, because in the boat, there were two people. There was the guy driving, who, by the way, was paraplegic, and my mom. So that's also like a powerful image, in the sense that what you think, at least, I don't know if it's very explicit or very conscious, but it's like this must not be like that's such extreme thing if my mom is here. I mean, that's the power of mom and dad being with you when you're doing something. That's the first time I skied. I remember, like, with a special ski that was pulled, and then when you got out of the water, you pull the rope and you will be able to hold it with your hands. By the way, I don't have the use of my fingers, so how I ski is like being with my wrists. So that's how I skied. And even the people in this ski school were quite amazed that I could ski like that. And it's a hard issue to ski with a high quadriplegia, because you don't have balance, you don't have strength with your torso. So everything that you control are your hands and your head. And with that, you have to control everything else. So I started skiing there. It must have been 1 year and a half later. And the first tournament I went to must have been probably next year after that. And then I had the chance to go to a lot of World Disabled Water Ski Tournaments that are a great experience. The people that you meet there are like, I mean, you meet people that are blind skiers, and they make slalom and they jump the ramp, and a lot of seat skiers, that it's a fun experience because you go there and see how they ski, what ski they use, how do they move around. It's like a great, like a growing experience.
That's super amazing. I grew up with a boat. I didn't trick ski, but it takes a lot of strength to do those things. And so it's amazing that you mainly did it with your sounds like your head and your wrists.
I know. I was just imagining the coordination and yeah. yeah, probably the balance so much. Just you would learn to lean and different things. But then it was cool how you were saying going to those events and seeing everyone else that's doing all these yeah, things with different.
Being blind or yeah. being whatever. That's so cool. And I do love that they, you know, in our world now, there's less limitations. There's more opportunities. You know, I think it's, we have a neighbor that, was paralyzed this last year and I just saw that he went snow skiing.
I know. I saw that too.
I just was like, that's so amazing. Cool. But they had it all set up so that it was, you know, and I actually, what's cool about it is his wife, you know, she was just so proud of him because he caught on so quickly and he's able to, you know, ski longer than most. And, but I just love that he can do things that he loves still and it doesn't have to end, you know, because of an accident, and that you are still able to do your skiing in a different way, but you're supposed to still be able, like you said, your mom was still be able to just be in the boat and you were able to be in the water. And now you get to watch your son, you know, do those things and be part of it. And that's just awesome.
Yeah.
I think that if you think about it, the disability is like, at least in the law, I mean, probably in the U.S. with the ADA, the American, I think it's come from the 90s. But the International Rights Convention for People with Disabilities is from 2006. So it's...
Oh, it's relatively new.
It's really new. So what I think is like... And this is like the way to see disability is like the definition of disability in that convention. It's like the... I would say it in my words, the issue is not in the person. The issue is like with the interaction of the obstacles of the environment. And if you like reconstruct or make adjustments so that there are no obstacles, disability disappears. But not a person. I mean, what disappears, disability is with this, I would say, there's a nice book about design, about inclusive design that's called Mismatch. And it's like this mismatch between your abilities and disabilities and the barriers and the obstacles that are in life. As we go on developing more inclusive designs and more inclusive environments, the disability starts being less like a misfortune and more as an opportunity of real diversity, of this like real right. inclusion, and inclusion in the sense of how to get the most of persons. And you don't get the best version of a person when he is in a non-welcoming environment. And that's what I think is like this. As you say, if a guy has an accident and he's snow skiing, it's because there is a place for him to go. There are special skis. There are people that are thinking, how can we enjoy life together? And how can we have the chance of being with you? Because you have something to offer. It's not just like a goodwill thing, you know? It's not just like a one-way direction on giving to others. It's like giving and developing opportunities to really have like more perspectives on life. And we will get that if we like make the adjustments necessary. So, but that is quite new. If you see it in the big picture of yeah. history, it's quite new, and that takes time.
Yeah, like when you think about just the simple thing, like I mean, just being able to have a parking spot, or be able to have a ramp, or be able to have space to get your wheelchair. Is huge, because like you're saying, it's just a barrier. You're still you and you want to do these things. And I think it's so cool that there's somebody that's like, let's make a water ski so that someone can still water ski or snow ski or drive a car. I mean, now they have you know, cars that are, that you can drive with your hands or something that can make it so there's not as many barriers. And yeah, as new as it is, it does seem like we have a long way to go. And it's cool that we're making progress.
And even the example of the ramps or in the cutting of the curbs that were first made for wheelchairs.
Oh, cutting up curbs. Right, yeah. Right.
The thing is that
that's huge.
Yeah, it's huge, but you can go there now with a skateboard or with a bike or with a, a stroller. So that is the perfect example of inclusive design, of how thinking in the needs of probably a special needed person, you can develop more intelligent ways of dealing with life. And that's another gift of disability. It's like this, like a way of thinking how to involve all kinds of people, how to have these like different experiences to make your life better.
Right. I was just thinking of two things. Like one, instead of thinking, oh, they can't water ski anymore or they can't snow ski anymore or whatever it is, it's just a different way of doing it. You know, you are still doing those things. It's just slightly different. Our friend, he's still snow skiing. It's just slightly different. And so it's still, there's, you guys are all, you know, it's making a way for you to still be involved in that. But then I love how you brought up, in my mind, I mean, this is kind of how I took part of what you were saying is, I think sometimes we think of accommodations as like, let's accommodate for them so that they can still be, you know, let's give them wheelchair access so they can enter this building. And we're kind of thinking of it as like giving these people this gift or opportunity, which they are kind of getting through it. But we're so lucky to like, how am I explaining this? Like, I don't know if I'm explaining this the right way, but by us like being more accommodating, and I don't mean like us and them, but like society is what I'm trying to say. We're getting the gift of having all kinds of people staying included and like getting the gift of having, you know, someone like you being able to like be in the same building with us because there's a ramp that you can. So
right. Or being in the boat like, with your son.
Yeah. Being on the boat water. Or being doing these different things, like kind of switching the doing this mindset shift in our brains of where it's not like we're just accommodating for the person, but it's for our whole society, because as a society as a whole, we're all going to benefit from having every kind of person in every place, because that's just how it works. Like, I think that we all know, like, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's a disability or a race or a gender or whatever it is, like making room for all people is what like
can be beneficial.
Yeah.
To
can
all
be
of
beneficial
us.
To all of us. And just on a broader level, but like on personal levels too. So anyway, I don't know. That was my thought.
I think that that's like a great way of putting it, Lindsay, because I would give you an example of that I'm working with right now. I'm a business consultant. And right now I'm working in a project for a movie theater company in Mexico. And the strategy is, if you develop your service standards thinking in the group of persons that are more, could be more challenging for you, probably the disabled group would be a great example for that. If you develop your service experience, your service standards, according to them, your service experience and your service standards for the rest of your clients will be superior. So that's
exactly,
that's a business strategy, you know what I'm talking about? It's not like, you say, like giving someone like the chance of, no. It's right. Like we all get better service if we think in serving the most challenging group and then start from there up. Not like an exemption, but as a strategy to be the best of our selves. That's I think that can apply to a person, to a company, or even to a country. The way you treat the most challenged group of persons can make you grow for all.
Yes, I love that.
That reminds me, and maybe this doesn't even quite go together, but it reminded me of the foundation you were telling me about in Spain. And remind me what that was called and what their purpose was. I don't know why that came to mind as you're speaking, but maybe when you remind me of what it was, maybe I'll remember.
this beautiful foundation in Spain, it's called, in Spanish, I would say first, it's lo que de verdad importa, what really matters. And what they do is that the short story is that my friend Maria, she got like this diary of a very rich man who was about to die. He had cancer, and he wrote this diary for his kids, and it was what really matters. I would write what really matters in life so you can learn from my experience. And then what she thought is, why do you have to wait till you have cancer or till you have a dying experience to think and to learn on what really matters? So what they do is that they invite people to speak with mostly high school students. And it's like a one day with three presentations of people that have something to say about their life. They're not, this is not like an academic gathering. It's like life testimonials. And what they say, it's like, this is my life. This is what really matters to me. And I will tell you so that you challenge yourself to find what really matters to you. And I think that's a great way of showing like young people that there are many ways to find what really matters, and to get young people to think on what really matters, especially when I think we have to work a lot to help our youngsters see hope in the future. And I think that's a great thing, a great way to do it, like what Really Matters Foundation is doing.
Yes. So did you go to it or did you speak at it? I can't remember why we brought that up.
I was invited to a lot of places in Spain with them to speak.
Okay,
as part of it, I had the chance of listening to a lot, I'm meeting a lot of like really, really interesting people. I would say, for instance, I met Irene Villa. Irene is she's from Spain. She's from Madrid. I don't know how old is she. She must be like 40 something. When she was 12 or 13, she got in her car to go to the school with her mom. And the bomb and the car exploded with a bomb from the ETA, and her mom lost one arm and one leg. Irene lost both of her legs up to the waist and three fingers from the left hand. And what I find impressive, you know, about her story is that there's a point when her mom asked her, Irene, what are you going to do? Because there are like two roads ahead. One is being resentful and being angry with the people that did us this. And the second road is to forgive, to keep on with our lives and to move ahead. I will go with the second road. What will you do? And Irene answered, I don't have an issue, Mom. I was born without legs, and I don't have anyone to blame. And in one of the Congress, I have even a picture of that. I met a guy named Shane O'Doherty, Shane Paul O'Doherty, when he was, I don't know, 16, 17, I don't know, he wasn't a teenager. He was the responsible of the bombs of the IRA army. And he put bombs. Mm-hmm. And they put him in jail. And after that, he's working in a rehab center in Ireland. And he went to What Really Matters to speak about his experience.
Wow.
And I have a picture of Irene looking at him. And only... Oh, wow. Only a person who has really lived forgiveness is able to look at shame as Irene looks at him. That is when that's an example of what really matters, and it's not like a theoretical approach. It's like these experiences of truly seeing the power of forgiveness and
reconciliation. Yeah, but that was super powerful.
Yeah,
to be a part of. But yeah, I just remember when you talked about that in our lunch that I thought, what an amazing foundation, and the message of, you know, don't wait until something like that happens. Don't wait till you're almost ready to die to think about what really matters. And it's so cool that it's focused on kind of teenager, high school kids, because it's easy when you're a high school kid to be, it's all about me and you're just living your life and you don't really, I don't know, you're not thinking about those things at that age, but how important it is to do that and how much better life you could have, or a more fulfilled life, a life filled with empathy and love, if you're focusing on what really matters before something happens.
I think that's an awesome thing they're doing. I wish there was something like that in our community.
I think that happens. The what really matters is like very explicit on their objective and on the way of working. But Lindsay, I think that happens every day in real life. You know. I worked as a school principal for 10 years. And one of the things that I found incredible, and I really would say that have touched my life, especially we didn't have high school. We just had till middle school. And in middle school, what I found out is kids are putting like a space between them and their parents. And that's normal. They're trying to build their own personality. They're trying to be independent. And they put a distance there. And they seem to be like very confident. But they're scared as hell.
They
try to project that and to mingle with the crowd, but they're scared. And I found that middle school teachers have the greatest opportunity in life to touch the minds, the hearts, and to be real mentors and tutors for kids that age. And that happens every day in middle school. I would say, I learned this from one of our middle school teachers. He told me, look, Jorge, the subjects that we teach here, he was a great literature teacher, by the way, but he said the subjects that we teach are excuses. The real thing, what really matters, is our children's heart. That's what you write, the real literature. Literature is just like a way of getting close to them. In Spanish, it works very nicely because it's the subjects are the pretexto. Pretexto is excuse. The text, el texto, is the heart of our kids. And that's the way I think, Lindsay, it works every day. What really matters works every day in the ordinary miracle of middle school teachers when they are really passionate and have the really responsible opportunity to touch the life of every kid at that age. And what I think is that in Mexico, it's like a very fun, in the north of the country, you go there and you don't even know a kid that you're meeting, but they would say, hey, say hi to your tío Jorge, you know, your uncle Jorge. You're not his uncle, you just met the guy. But that's the way they do it, you know? It's like, and I find there's a wisdom there. Because from nowhere, you have a new cousin. And if we would I got that to our school. And I told every parent that enrolled the kid in our school, okay, you're enrolling your kid. And when you sign this paper, I said, you're enrolling your kid, okay, you are responsible as being the mom or dad of your kid. But you are signing that you are responsible of being the uncle or aunt of the other 200 kids. And that's what we need. Going. We need uncles. We need people that care for the kids, even if they're not your direct kids. And I think that that builds up a community. At least in my experience, that's what worked with me.
Yeah, I really appreciate teachers that make the effort and go above and beyond just teaching the subject and doing what you said. I have my oldest son has some learning disabilities and was in some special ed classes, and some other classes called co-taught classes. So he would have the teacher, but then there'd be another teacher there with him. And, you know, as a mom, I was nervous about his experience there. Like, was he going to be bullied? Was he going to feel behind? Were the teachers going to treat him different? And at least my experience with our high school here, I mean, it was an amazing experience because some of these teachers really went out of their way to make him feel accepted and to feel part of the class and to not feel different. And we'd go to parent-teacher conferences and they would just tell him how wonderful he was and how they loved having him in the classroom and they wished other kids could learn from him and his, you know, and he's just a really nice, you know, kid, mm-hmm. but school was hard for him. But these teachers made his experience different than it could have been. It could have been an awful experience for him. Yeah. But to this day, he's graduated, but he is a Riverton High School fan through and through, and he loved his experience there. And he even had, you know, some students that really made a difference in his life, reached out to him, ate lunch with him, you know, and I so appreciated how it wasn't the education I was concerned about for him. I was concerned about how people made him feel.
Yeah.
And luckily he was able to feel part of the school. He was able to feel liked and loved and accepted by his peers and his teachers, and that made all the difference for him and for me as his mother.
That's so cool, because I, you know, you've said what a big fan of Riverton High he is, and he'll support all the sports and mm-hmm. different things, but that makes so much sense. I had just, you know, now that you're saying that, I kind of thought, oh yeah, of course he graduated from there and he had a good experience, but of course, like, having those teachers
has some loyalty to
that made that such a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
I think that's Tere, my wife, she works in a school, and it's an inclusive school. And also, that's what I found there, that really inclusion, it's not like just giving a kid the chance to be there, but thinking as a strategy for life. Teachers, they have to make curriculum adjustments. For kids with special needs, they develop the competence and the ability to make curriculum adjustments for all the other kids. So the school gets better. The teachers get better by having your kid there. It's not just like a gift that they give him. It's like a very gift that we all grow when we have the chance to be the best version of what we can be through each other.
It's the same thing what you're saying with the accessibility for wheelchairs or for disabilities. He also has a disability, and it was that they, you know, made some adjustments, but I know that it can also bless or help others, like, in every way. The teachers, the students, it helps us all, just like you were saying, on both the physical, mental, intellectual side. If we can have inclusion in all these ways, it only strengthens and helps all of us.
Yeah. It's like a two-way gift for everyone. Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome.
I know. This has been...
I know.
I just love talking to you, which I already knew I did.
Conversation, yeah.
Do you have other thoughts or perspectives that you want to share with us? I mean, I feel like we've been...
I know, it's been so good. Yeah, any other parts of your story that you want to touch on? Or
I would like to talk to you about one of the first things that we talked about, but it was just like by the way, Chantel, is the title of my book, Ensanchar la Vida, to broaden your life? I would like to tell you the story that's behind that.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
I work in Mexico in the Teleton Foundation. We have 22 rehab centers. We have a cancer hospital, an autism center, and a university. It's a very big foundation, and I'm very proud to work there and to work with people that work for people. That's my job there. I love my work, and I love working with people that help other people. And I remember many years ago, it was like it was a fundraising event that day. It was like a presentation. It was like, you know, all this production with lights and with music, and it was like a very paradoxical place, because I met a little boy, 6 or 7 years old, Daniel, and I remember that day he was receiving his diagnostic. His mom was there, and they just received the diagnosis of a muscular dystrophy of Duchenne. And if you know that, it's not just like a disability, it's a progressive disease, and where you're getting each time more paralyzed till your breathing paralyzes. So I remember that was in Mexico City. I went on the highway driving to Cuernavaca, which is like 1 hour drive. And while I was driving, in my mind, I was thinking, why does this happen? Why a kid gets this disease? Why is life like this? You know, these are like stupid questions because they don't have answers. And I remember a friend of mine, Eduardo, that he told me, Font, there are questions that are by themselves answers. If you find something about yourself, and if you make a question of truly something important about yourself, thanks to Daniel's life, short or long, is truly meaningful. And I remember that my grandfather, who was a doctor, he always told me, you know, life, you cannot always make life longer, but you can make it broader, wider, deeper. And that is what I think life is about. Try to make your life broader, wider, deeper. And in the way, try to help others through that. And, you know, God knows where Daniel is now. But we're talking about him here. That is a way to transcend. That is the way to go through the adventure of life, living and letting others see your footprints or your willprints or your love. living with the truly, like, hope of being useful to others and to help them live a better life. I think that's what I love about meeting people with challenges, and I know that's what you love about your podcast, because it's like going through life with the attitude of a permanent apprentice. When you meet someone, you make like a reverence with your heart, and you can say, you are my teacher. And thanks to you, I will have the chance to visit parts of my heart and my mind and my soul that only because you exist, I will visit and I will know. And that is the greatest gift of really meeting people. different perspectives, different experiences. And I really wish that you keep on with this job calling that you're doing, because it helps a lot of us to know and visit parts of our heart and our mind and our soul that sometimes with the rush of life, we forget to visit. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes, wow, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I love that.
That was super powerful. Yeah. And I feel like it really wrapped up kind of your whole purpose, you know, the living, you know, with intention, being grateful for today, you know, realizing what really matters, and then giving back to others by sharing your story, and then touching. Yeah, I just, wow.
Yeah, and I think I had read that quote on your bio. Can you say it one more time? Did you say it was your grandfather that told you at first that was a doctor? It was, you can't make your life longer, or how did you say it exactly?
My grandfather, what he said is, you can't always make your life longer or other life, but you can always make it broader, make it wider, deeper. And one last thing that I would say that he also taught me is like, and also my mom told me this, there are some moments in life when life smiles at you, but the important parts in life are when you have to smile to life, even if it's not smiling back, because that's where you show what's really in your heart. And that is, I think, one of the things that are truly helpful, because it helps you step out of victimhood, because you can always blame the circumstances and blame them for your feelings or for your attitudes. But as Viktor Frankl says, the truly freedom is the liberty, the freedom to decide what is going to be your attitude to face life. And I think that's what a lot of people that I've heard in your podcast teaches you. It's like same things can happen. The difference is how lucky are you with the people that are around you, and what you want to take through life. And that, I think, are some of the clues, not all of them, but some of the clues that help us build our resilience. And what help us be resilient also help us to live better lives. You don't only develop abilities or attitudes to be ready, so when life hits you hard, you're ready. That's like living a life buying an insurance. And I think that it's better to live your life fully, enjoy the ride, live it as an adventure, so that when life strikes you, you're ready, you're prepared, you have been trained, enjoying your training every day, so that you can be a better person. So when life asks you a difficult question, you know, like the better way to answer back is in the plural of we, of the people that are with you. So I think that's what I think about enjoying the adventure of life, and enjoy it by sharing it to others so it can be multiplied.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Viktor Frankl, he comes up a lot.
I know he has. Yeah. There's probably so many good quotes in that book.
Yeah. Have it all. It's a great highlighted book.
Yeah. All right. Well, we usually like to end our interview with asking how you find beauty in life after going through your transition. I feel like you've already shared so many wonderful things, but I feel like you might, have more. Yeah. So what, or anything. Yeah. How do you take that into your life?
I would say, like, if I would have to say something even like different from what I've been saying all the podcast has been, I hope that it has not been very long and repetitive, but
No, I loved it.
I would say something different. And you know what's really something different that I've found in life that is something that I would like to practice more? Is spiritual and healthy sense of humor. To laugh at my stupid problems, because when you laugh at yourself, you take perspective and you put your problems in the size that they are. And I think that that's one of the things that I love about Tere, Pablo, my cousins, my brother, my friends, is that they make me laugh about myself. So I don't take myself too seriously, so I can go through life being more light and more helpful to others. I think that a healthy sense of humor, they say it's a way to know how spiritual a person is. Because if you laugh at yourself, it's because, that's what they say, it's because that you trust that there is something bigger than you. If you laugh about yourself, you're being truly spiritual. So I hope that I can be a truly spiritual guy and laugh about me and my problems and take life less seriously and more wisely.
Ooh, I love that. So good. Yeah, I love that. I've never thought of it quite in that way. So I really like that you
Yeah, I like the perspective. Yeah. I mean, I know I feel good when I laugh and I know that it's like healthy. And I even think Viktor Frankl talks about the importance of humor, you know, when you're going through hard things, as well as like appreciating, you know, nature or whatever, but humor. And I was like, wow, humor, like even in his circumstance in a concentration camp, like it was important to laugh at yourself. And so I think that's great. And yeah, that was very like a different perspective and a different idea, but it's,
yeah, I love that.
It still kind of goes with who you are, because I feel like you just are a, you know, a happy person with a good perspective and can laugh at. We have to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah, sometimes we do. It helps get through life for sure. So
this has been so amazing. And we're so grateful that you took the time and honored that you shared your story and perspectives with us. And I feel really grateful that I got to meet you. And I feel like I haven't been able to portray like how, like it's like a special moment it was to be able to meet you and your wife. And then, you know, the way I left you, I just felt good and I felt happy inside and I felt nourished by you and your wife's story and your essence, I guess. Yeah. Like, so I just feel really grateful. And I love the Mexican culture. So I love the way my husband knows Spanish and I have a sister-in-law that speaks Spanish and my daughter's going to Spain and she's learning Spanish. So I love the language and how things are just a little bit, they're portrayed a little bit differently, but I feel like it's a, I don't know what the word, like a more intense language or more, you guys describe things more intensely. But I love that. And one of the things you said was if you ever come back to Orlando, because we just met at a restaurant when we met you and Teresa, but I loved how you said, if you come back to Orlando, we'd love to receive you in our home. And like, I love that word because we don't like, that's not, we would say we'd love to have you over. But I feel like when you casual, say, when you say you're receiving me in your home, it seems like a very like intimate invitation. Like a gesture, like that you really are honored to have us in your home and we would be honored to be there. So I just love who you are. I love your culture and the just.
Yeah. You're very eloquent. And I feel the same way. Like you're saying, like, after this conversation, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I got to go back and take notes of several things and post them on my fridge and all sorts of stuff. So you're very uplifting and inspiring. And yeah, you're just a wonderful person. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I enjoy very much like this experience. I like that word, you know, experience. It's not an interview. It's not just a podcast. It's like the experience of people that just want to go through life like helping ourselves and others to enjoy the ride, live the adventure, and find meaning on what we're doing. So I think that's what life's about. So it's a great experience to be with you. Thank you so much. And of course, you're invited, and we will receive you in our home. Right.
Well, if you ever make it to Utah, you're also, I would love to receive you in my home.
Yeah.
If you make it to Utah. So, okay. Well, thank you, Jorge.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and would love if you subscribe to the podcast and follow it along as we continue hearing more inspiring stories. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beautiful Shifts Podcast, where we will post updates with our latest interviews.
We'd like to thank the band We the Lion for giving us permission to use their beautiful song Move Along for our podcast. Take a minute to listen to the song and the lyrics and enjoy.
I find a way to know myself. All my thoughts are mine again. And begin to understand where to go. Now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. Feel the strength right in my bones. All I want is to believe life is my own. Life is my own. I'll start again. My mind is free now. I can feel. I'll take a chance, I won't be wrong. Yes, now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey.